Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on our Inside Coverage Preview Show, Jared Goff and Patrick Mahomes meet again in Kansas City. Is the AFC South really that good? And is there a quarterback controversy in San Francisco? Ben Fox, Frank Schwab, Inside Coverage next. It's week six, everybody. Let's do a show. Welcome to our Inside Coverage, the How and the Why Thursday edition, heading into week six, recorded before the Thursday night football in the NFL's glamour division, the NFC East, the Giants and the Eagles in New York, or, you know, at least the tri-state area. Hi, my name is Andrew Siciliano. We thank you for being here. I'm going to call this a casual Thursday. I'm just a guy wearing a hoodie in the home office. We thank you for being here on what is a huge Thursday in the baseball playoffs as well. As we record this, the Dodgers are battling the Phillies, and our good friend Frank Schwab is on pins and needles awaiting yet another Cubs-Brewers game, or proper Brewers-Cubs game. How are you, sir?
Freaking out, nervous, scared, whatever. What? Yeah, no big deal. Just our Cy Young candidate on the mound against the hated rivals from the South. With the, you know, could move on to the LCS for the fourth time in my life. Like no big deal. Again, the baseball playoffs. Love it. Love having all this extra stress in my life. Ben, how are you? You must be doing better than me.
Ben Fox, everybody as well. Hey, Ben.
I'm doing well. You know, we had a team in Minnesota that was called the Twins, and then they sold the entire team at the trade deadline. So I'm unfamiliar with this sport of baseball you're referring to. I haven't had to pay much attention the rest of this season. So that's been the nice part. I do remember postseason baseball being very stressful. It's just like 3 hours, now maybe 2 hours. Of stress, but yeah,
It's more than two or three, because I can tell you from the moment I woke up this morning, I was thinking about all of the bad things that could happen tonight at Wrigley Field. So yeah, great.
I have made myself physically ill over the years watching playoff baseball. I mean, physically ill. You put so much emotional energy into it. I'll be honest with you. I wish the Guardians kept winning. I went to game one last week in Cleveland, the one they lost to the Tigers, the first one. I'm okay with not getting emotionally wrapped up right now. Like, I'm good. I'm spent. My passion bucket is spent on baseball this year. I am just now an impartial observer, and I am okay with that. And actually, and I promise we'll get to the football in a second, because the Guardians seemingly were out of it midsummer and then in it and then out of it again and then in it and then out of it again, I actually didn't get that emotionally wrapped up into it this year. Like, I was into it when I was there, and game two, don't get me wrong, I'm watching it in the Browns offices and I am into it. But when they lost, I'm like, you know what? It's okay. Like, it really is okay. They're not that good. But I feel you. My team's there every year. They don't win it every year. For you, Mr. Schwab, like, I get it. I get it. Plus, it's the Cubs, and to heck with
that's
the Cubs.
That's the thing, yeah. If they were to lose to the Padres, whatever, that's bad. I wouldn't be happy about it, but I'm used to it. Yeah, losing to the Cubs. I have too many Cubs fans in my life to lose this one. Yeah, I'd never hear the end of it.
All right, let's get to football. You want to do that? You want to do football? So here's what we do. We generally on Thursday, because, look, we could preview every game. We could. That would be like a three-hour show, because we like to actually go in depth here. So we're going to pick five or six games. The five most important games to us is how I like to call it, but we're going to throw in a sixth today. So it's really the five and a half games, six games that are the most important games to us. Game number one, we don't have a drum roll. I'm told that's above budget. But game number one on my $50 Living Spaces table. I never thought this would be game number one. The 3-2 Seahawks on the road at the 4-1 short rest Jacksonville Jaguars. Chris Myers, Mark Schlereth in for Mark Sanchez, and Sarah Kustok, the former pooper, on the sideline for this one. So here's the crazy thing. The Jaguars can be the very first team this year to pass their win total from a year ago if they win this week six. Jaguars won four games last year. They have won four games already this year. They are 4-1 for the first time since 2007, and they are doing so by doing something. I know Trevor Lawrence, yeah, he had a good game, and the offense and Liam Cohen, like, they get the attention here. But they're doing it with defense here. If I could just give you some of these numbers here for a second. Jacksonville last year had 9 takeaways and 25 points off of takeaways the entire season. That's it. And that was the worst in the NFL, the points off of takeaways. This year, they already have 4 games with 3 takeaways. No other team has more than 2. And not only that, they lead the league with 14 takeaways and 10 of them are picks. And they just traded Tyson Campbell, who doesn't have a pick. And they get back Greg Newsome, one of my favorite people in the NFL. Jacksonville is winning with defense. And they get a Seattle team that comes in here with a couple of really good running backs and Sam Darnold and JSN having the best non-Puka Nacua offensive receiver and catching the reception season in the NFL. I never thought this was going to be a good game a couple of weeks ago, but when you look at the fact that the Seahawks have won 8 straight road games, they have not lost a road game. And they live, if you don't know where Seattle is, look at a map. Seattle, when it goes anywhere basically beyond their division, it's an awful road trip. They have not lost a road trip in over a year on the calendar. Jacksonville, though, is feeling itself. Jacksonville, you would think, is the better football team here. I believe, however, Frank, I believe in Sam Darnold. I believe that defense travels. I believe that when given the opportunity, and then their 2 losses, they had that opportunity to do something at the end, that Sam Darnold this time is going to do it. I think the Jaguars fall to 4-2. I think they're, I don't know, I don't say they're comfortable, but I just believe in JSN and I believe in that defense, despite the fact that Mike McDonald can't pressure the passer this year.
Yeah, first of all, I know you're a real football fan if you feel like I do about this game. This is must-watch TV. These are 2 good teams. This is a really fun game. Forget what we thought about them before the season. Both good storylines, you know, with newish coaches. I know Mike McDonald's in his second year, but Liam Cohen's in his first. And they've really built good programs. I really like what both of these teams are doing. And I actually agree with you, Andrew. I think that Seattle's the right side here. The records indicate that Jaguars are the better team. But if you look at, you know, some of the advanced analytics like DVOA, they have Seattle as a top 3 team. And I agree with that. I think that when you watch this team, the defense is fantastic. Sam Darnold is playing like he did last year. Surprise, surprise, right? Sam Darnold has carried that over to a new year. His pass rating is actually better than it was last year with the Minnesota Vikings, which is a surprise. They have a lot of weapons on offense. This is just a good team. And yes, usually you would think, okay, a West Coast team going east, playing early, that's not great. This Seattle team has a weird home road split so far. They haven't been good at home, but they've been great on the road. Remember back to, I think it was week 2, they played Pittsburgh early game in the Eastern time zone. They blew out the Pittsburgh Steelers. For some reason, this team likes to travel. And I think that there's nothing against the Jaguars. I think they're a good team too. But I think there's a little bit of a letdown in a game that was one of their biggest wins in 10 years, really. When I talked about it the other day, I forgot about the Chargers comeback in the wild card. So shame on me. That was their biggest win of the last 10 years. But this one, beating the Chiefs, ain't far off. I can see a little bit of a letdown for the Jaguars. And the fact is, they're just playing a good Seattle team. I believe in the Seattle team. I actually believe the Seattle team could win the NFC West. I'll just come out and say it. I think the Seattle Seahawks win the NFC West. And I think they get a win here at Jacksonville. That kind of opens people's eyes to the fact that, yes, Seattle, in Mike McDonald's second season, they're very good.
Yeah, I think Frank hit on it. What's so interesting about the Seahawks, they were number 1 in DVOA last week. And then even after that loss to the Bucs, they only slipped to number 2. So this is still a team the advanced metrics like, still a team that certainly has been playing well. And Sam Darnold, bad things sometimes, as a Vikings fan, right? Bad things sometimes tend to happen late in games. It looked like he was trying to ground that ball. against the Bucks. It hits off someone's helmet, turns into an interception. But that was a really good game back and forth between two very good teams in the NFC. Jaguars open a 1.5-point favorite. They are a 1-point favorite at some books. Some books it's pick. Some books this is actually flipped to the Seahawks as a short 1.5-point favorite. The public all over the Seahawks here, which is interesting just because they're not a team you would think that tends to get a lot of public support. But certainly they're 3-2 against the number, have done well generally for bettors, and they have played well on the road. This is obviously a long trip, right? Seattle to Jacksonville. Jacksonville coming off of that Monday night game, short rest, but obviously gets to stay at home where Seattle has to travel all the way across the country. Jaguars 4-1 against the spread. That's the first time since 2002. They've actually never been 5-1 against the spread as a franchise. And the only time they've been 5-1 straight up was 1999 when they started 13-1. So this is also a really important game for the Jaguars. They play the Rams next week in London. So 4-1 right now, but that easily could be 4-3 potentially, depending on how this goes. I think a lot of injuries as well for the Seahawks in the secondary is one thing to keep an eye on. Jaguars offense has certainly been playing well. The defense, like you mentioned, Andrew's been capitalizing on turnovers. There's no way they can keep that up. They're not going to be returning 99-yard interceptions for touchdowns every single week, but you can't take away the wins that they've already banked. So I think this is a really interesting game that's going to be roughly a pick 'em. It's kind of, do you believe in the Seahawks, who have that rest, again, a little more rest, have to travel all the way across the country, versus the Jaguars? Are they that good? Is the defense that good? It's going to be a little of a kind of prove it for both teams. And look, barring a tie, one of them is going to be, or potentially the Jaguars are 5-1. That would be a pretty incredible story early in the season.
Can I ask real quick, Ben, a real quick question? When I saw the spread come out, I was actually shocked it wasn't Jaguars minus three, because that's kind of the standard. You know, you're 4-1 team at home, team traveling. Do you view that line being so short as respect for the Seahawks or disrespect for the Jaguars? I couldn't figure out which one it was.
Good question.
I would guess it's probably a little more respect for the Seahawks with that DVOA you mentioned, right? It's just like they were the number one team, but and again, odds makers look at everything. They're not going to judge only based off of DVOA and other metrics, but those underlying metrics have been good for the Seahawks, and they barely lost a game to the 49ers and they barely lost a game to the Bucks. So they've played well overall. I think Jacksonville, you look at what is sustainable, and those defense, they've just gained so many expected points from defensive turnovers against the 49ers. That happened as well. And against the Chiefs, you know, they gave up a ton of yards overall. So is it a little smoke and mirrors? Whereas I think the Seahawks also gave up a ton of yards, but I think they're viewing that a little more as that was a lot of injuries as well on the Seahawks versus that underlying defense is still really good, assuming everyone's there, which they may not be this week.
Right. By the way, I respect DVOA. I'm still waiting for the very first time I'm in a bar and somebody says, man, I don't know. Their special teams DVOA really, really bothers me.
We'll have to go get beers, Andrew. That's what you're telling me.
Their DVOA doesn't speak to me this week, guys. It just doesn't. Although Matt LaFleur, I will say yesterday, the head coach of the Packers, was asked about giving up explosives, special teams explosives, and how that has been an issue. And he said something along the lines of, you know, I don't know about like the DVOA. I don't know all that BS. But he didn't mean it in like a really dismissive way. He was just saying, hey, I don't care what the advanced metrics say. I know what the eye test says, and the eye test says we have to fix these things. It wasn't, you know, angry and dismissive, but it was, I just love that a coach is on the podium basically going, I don't care about the DVOA. You know, come on.
And I'll jump in, Andrew, for a sec as well, because I found it in my notes from what Frank said. So the Seahawks number two overall by DVOA, Jaguars 12th. But what's also interesting, the Seahawks at 3-2, they're the second, they have the second highest rated DVOA of any 3-2 team since 1978. So in other words, they're 3-2, but the underlying metrics are saying this is a really good team.
And they had the ball with a chance to win in both of their losses. One of them was a Nick Bosa strip sack of Sam Darnold. The other one was that pick you just mentioned last week that was tipped, and then Lavonte David made it a fantastic play. So, yeah, they were there in both games. And I also find the travel thing interesting because, and again, I'm kind of an airline geek and a travel geek here, but going Seattle to Florida, whether it's Jacksonville, Tampa, or Miami, is honestly as bad a trip. It's easier for the Patriots to go to London, really it is, in terms of the flight, than it is for the Seahawks to go to Florida. Now, the Patriots going to London, you would do it as an overnight flight, and this, the Seahawks wouldn't take a red eye, they would fly in the morning, but you get my point. There's a time difference, once 3 hours, once 5 hours, but this is a really, really, really long trip for them when it comes to domestic travel between two NFL cities. Yeah. This
come on,
is pretty
man. Nobody's
much
feeling
as bad
sorry on those charter flights. You've been on those charter
I'm
flights,
not,
Andrew. What, the
I'm
caviar is going to get cold? Like, what are we going to do? Come on.
I'm not suggesting they need sympathy. I'm saying this isn't just like taking a quick hop down to San Jose and then a 10-minute bus drive over to Levi Stadium. This is a much different thing. And the Seahawks, to their credit, regardless, and they were very good as well under Pete Carroll. It's not just a new thing under Mike McDonald. Pete Carroll was as good a coach with his team going west to East Coast time zone as there have been in the last 20 years. Mike McDonald's been great at it. I mean, truly, truly great at it. So, yeah, that's a good one. Also, final thought here, again, on that trade. So Tyson Campbell signed for at least one more year. Greg Newsom's in the fifth-year option. It was one of those trades where you look at it last night, the Browns and the Jags trading corners, taking like 15 picks apart back in the 2021 draft, where you go, this doesn't make sense. But in reality, what it is the Browns going, we will take a year under contract at a good number for a guy that we view as talented and locked out one of our corners for next year. And the Jaguars are going, this guy gives up too many explosives. We play more zone than man. Now you can have him. So hopefully it's a win-win for those two teams. All right, that's one game down. We took too long. Shocker. Game number two, Arizona. I never thought I'd pick this as game number two. Arizona, which might have to go with Jake Brissett, might have to go with Jacoby Brissett because Kyler Murray didn't practice again today, on the road at the juggernaut, the other one in the AFC South, the 4-1 Indianapolis Colts. This is a Fox game with Kevin Kugler and Daryl Johnston and Allison Williams down on the sideline. So yesterday, Ben, Frank and I were talking about some Colts numbers and do we believe the Colts? Are they a pretender or contender? Frank gave them an A. Where are they in the power rankings? So on and so forth. Frank, this morning I did a little bit of a deeper dive off our conversation and looked at some of these numbers with the Colts. Sure. What they are doing, not punting and not turning the ball over like this one. This one is kind of nuts. They punted 7 times. We know that. They have 14 combined punts and giveaways and sacks. Again, punts, giveaways, sacks. 14. Wow. Like, that number doesn't make sense. But the number that blew me away the most is a comparison to two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. So if you go back to the 1970 merger, right now the Colts are averaging 32 points a game. If you go back to the 1970 merger, there are only three teams with a quote-unquote new quarterback, so whether it's free agency, trade, or even in the draft, to score 30 points a game in their first season with a new quarterback. One of them is this year's Indianapolis Colts with Daniel Jones. The other two, the 2022 Super Bowl champion Bucks with Tom Brady, and the 2012 Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning. What Daniel Jones is doing through 5 games with the Indianapolis Colts can only be compared to what Tom Brady did with the Bucks and Peyton Manning did with the Broncos. Put that in your cup and pour it over ice. That is absolutely absurd. Absurd. And oh yeah, like, you know, Jonathan Taylor is back, scoring 3 touchdowns a game. at all those parts that Chris Ballard drafted that were height, weight, speed, but didn't do anything with Anthony Richardson. All of a sudden, the light has come on, and they're the players that you thought they were going to be when Ballard took them. And then you have the Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon reunion thing, the two coordinators from the Eagles, obviously, that went on their Super Bowl run a few years ago. You put that together and realize that Jonathan Gannon, with the way his team has lost, with the way they started and then now fall apart late in games, they're the worst fourth quarter team in football. And there's no one even close. They are that bad. Last week was a comedy of errors. I'm not saying Jonathan Gannon is on a hot seat, but this game has a lot of layers to it, especially if Jake Brisket, one of my favorites, is the quarterback this week, and he would become the 41st different starter already this year. Actually, it's really 40, but if you want to count Flacco twice, Frank, it would be 40.
I count Joe Flacco as many times as you want. I have been skeptical about the Colts this week at a couple of our shows, Yahoo Sports Daily and here on Inside Coverage. But if I didn't do this yesterday, I can't remember if I did because my mind's on baseball. But I just want to read real quick the Colts' upcoming schedule, okay? Real quick. Cardinals at home.
Good.
At the Chargers, who are really beat up. At home against the Titans, at the Steelers, who I don't believe in, and then at home against the Falcons. Guys, the Indianapolis Colts might be like 9-1 at some point this year. It's perfectly reasonable, at least 8-2. This is really going to become a thing. I have been skeptical of the Colts, but in this spot, look, the way the Cardinals lost last week, I think we all would agree. This thing could go one of two ways after a loss like that. That was so stupid, so crushing, so devastating. You're either going to rally the next week because you're really, really upset, or you are just going to be devastated for a few weeks. There's going to be a hangover. And you know what? With the Kyler Murray injury, even if he plays on Sunday, and I kind of assume he will, he's a tough dude. He's going to be compromised, though. Kyler Murray not being mobile, that ain't the quarterback I want. So I think the Colts blow them out. I really do. I think the Colts are going to do maybe not what they did to the Raiders, but not that far off either. This Colts team is absolutely rolling. Steichen's been awesome after he was on the hot seat earlier in the year. And there's no proof of concept that the Cardinals are any good. The Cardinals beat the Saints. The Cardinals beat the Panthers at home, two of the worst teams of football. They've lost three games since then. Where's
they
any
barely
proof
beat
that
the Panthers? They had to hang on for dear life.
Barely beat the Panthers. And barely beat the Saints. Opening day, they barely beat the Saints. Like, so what proof do we have that the Cardinals are any good? And I'm asking them to go on the road after that loss with a hobbled Kyler Murray and beat the hottest team of football? No, that ain't going to happen. I think the Colts roll in this game. I think they absolutely double digits easy for the Colts here.
Yeah, this is, we'll have some other games that we'll talk about later where it's, I think, difficult to make a case for the underdog. And this is what, you could certainly see it depending on the number, right? This was Colts 3.5, 4. It's up to 7.5 at some books, right? And that's because a lot of the Kyler Murray, and we're not exactly sure. And that's roughly in line with the article I did before the season. I believe it was around 4 points, the difference between Kyler Murray and Jacoby Brissett. And look, Brissett's a steady influence if he does end up playing. He has his own limitations, obviously not mobile. And I agree with Frank, like Kyler Murray, the things that make him special and elite all have to do with his mobility and escapability and off-platform throws. Well, if you have a foot injury, it's very difficult to do all those things. So you don't want to have a short quarterback who's stuck in the pocket. That's not what you want, certainly for the Cardinals. They also have a ton of defensive injuries, which is not something you want against the Colts. And the Colts, we just talked about the Jaguars, 4-1 against the spread. The Colts are also 4-1 against the spread, and they're covering by almost 13 points a game, which is number one in the NFL. So they are not only covering, a lot of these are what they call rocking chair wins, right? I think the Raiders might have been up 3-0, and that was about it, right? After that, there was no chance they were coming back and winning that game, let alone covering it. The Cardinals, this, I think, is a referendum on coaching, right? Jonathan Gannon has been, I think, a better coach maybe than people necessarily expected in Arizona. This is the time, right? He was fined, whether or not you agree with that or not, with the DeMarcado fumble and how it blew up on the sidelines. Like, now you're traveling on the road, potentially without your starting quarterback, against one of the best teams in the NFL so far, at their place where they have played well. this either, I think, is a close game, or to Frank's point, where it more likely goes, is just an absolute abomination, and the Colts run away, and you say, oh man, they're 5-1. And some of those teams, you do always have to look back, right? And you say, how many backup quarterbacks did they play? And to your point, Colts third in DVOA, Cardinals 19th, right? So a big gap there, but certainly with the quarterback too. No surprise, public all over the Colts at obviously lower numbers. We'll see what it comes in over the next few days at 7, 7.5. But this one could get ugly. I think the Colts will be certainly in a lot of money line parlays, teasers, and all of a sudden could be a survivor play if you didn't use them already last week.
Interesting. So the Colts are top five in both scoring offense and defense, but the numbers are what really jumps off the page. Colts are scoring 32.6 a game. 32.6 points a game. They're allowing, and it's third in defense, and in scoring defense, 17.9. So we're talking an 18.5 point delta between scoring and how many points they're giving up. And as for the Cardinals, they're minus 25 in the fourth quarter, which is, again, the worst in the NFL for point differential. But they have yet to play a playoff team from a year ago. So keep that in mind, too, when you look at the record and the games that they've won and the games that they've blown. They and the Panthers are the only two teams in the NFL this year that have yet to play a team that made the playoffs a year ago. So they're limited. They're limited with Kyler. And if it is Jacoby Brissett, hey, I think it's a fun little story. There's the Jacoby Brissett revenge game against one of his former teams. And it is nice to see Marvin Harrison back for the first time in his dad's old building where he used to be a little kid running around. That's right. Lucas Oil. That's kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, I'd be stunned if the Colts are anything other than 5-1. The question is, do the Jaguars keep pace? We just put two AFC South games at the top of our show. Amazing. Coming up next, is it Mac Jones time? Looks like it. Should it always be Mac Jones time? And can the Bengals Flacco around and save their season? That's Frank. That's Ben. I'm Andrew. This is Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage, everybody. Hi, my name is Andrew. We have Frank here. We have Ben here. And we have your Week 6 preview show here. We've already done stunningly two games featuring AFC South teams to lead off the show. Like, what hath God wrought? Let's get to this one between the NFC West and the NFC South. The 4-1 San Francisco 49ers on the road against the 4-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This game in Tampa with Nance and Romo and Tracy Wolfson down on the sideline. Both of these teams, guys, have been winning nail biters. The Bucs have won all four of their games by three or fewer points. The Niners have won all four of their games by five or fewer points. And the Niners are doing it stunningly with Robert Saleh back in the building, but with like no sacks and with no turnovers. They've yet to pick off a pass. And they have only six sacks, which is tied for the third fewest in the NFL. And they're working Christian McCaffrey to death. He's averaging 26 touches a game. He is on pace. It's only 5 weeks. He is on pace for 176 targets in the pass game. Think about that. 176 targets in the pass game. Pearsall's out, it looks like. Jennings, I mean, they're banged up. Brandon Ayuk's still not coming back. So it's like the Kendrick Bourne show. He had 10 passes when last we saw the 49ers on the Thursday night with a nail-biting overtime win in Los Angeles. And Mac Jones, McCorkle Jones, everybody, is 3-0 as a starter. And I am not trying to create a quarterback controversy, but if McCorkle Jones, former child model in the state of Florida, goes into Florida and beats America's MVP, the man who right now can do no wrong, Baker Mayfield. He can do no wrong at all. If he does that, then, ladies and gentlemen, we Frank, are striking up the Mac Jones Ain't Giving That Job Back band.
Oh, goodness. Oh, good. And this, you're talking to a guy who said over and over and over again, the 49ers should not pay Brock Purdy. Remember that? I did say that a few times. But no, Brock Purdy's getting his job back. Like, they did not pay $255 million to that guy to sit him on the bench behind Mac Jones. And that leads me into this game. I think we are a little over our skis with the Mac Jones hype. Like, he's been great. Don't get me wrong. Even go back to last year with Jacksonville. I thought he played really well. I mean, look at Brian Thomas with him and with Trevor Lawrence this year. It's a night and day. He turned Brian Thomas into a superstar as a rookie last year. But it's still Mac Jones. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. He played great against the Rams. I'm not sure exactly that I'm replacing my $255 million quarterback with him, and I'm not sure he wins this game either. And it's not necessarily because of the offense, which is still really banged up, like you said, the Kendrick Bourne show probably, unless Juwan Jennings comes back. But it's the defense. It is, since Nick Bosa went out, and he's done for the year, like you said, no pressure on a quarterback, no big plays. Last week, yeah, the Rams lost, but Matthew Stafford had 389 yards passing, and he just was doing whatever he wanted downfield. And now you come in to face the Bucs. Baker Mayfield, once again, playing out of his mind. Yes, he is an MVP candidate because, as I've talked about it, the Buccaneers can moonwalk their way back into that number one seed. He will get MVP votes, period. Like, that's going to happen, especially when you have 10 touchdowns, one interception. I like the Buccaneers in this game. And I was really surprised, honestly, Ben, that the spread was not over a field goal. I think there's a lot of respect for the 49ers, who are still dealing with a lot of injuries. We're still dealing with, you know, the fact that they're not blowing out teams, that their defense isn't very good. I just don't trust this 49ers team that much right now. I respect what they've done completely. I think Kyle Shanahan's coach of the year so far. But I just think the Buccaneers win this game. I know the Buccaneers don't win games by more than 3 points this season. Don't get me wrong. But still, I was surprised to see they were only -3, -2.5, I think, earlier in the week. You can speak to that. But yeah, Buccaneers for me all day here, because I'm not on the Mac Jones bandwagon quite yet.
Yeah, and to your point, this did open 2.5, pushed up to 3 with some sharp action at a couple different books. Two teams I'm not sure that, you know, the advanced analytics love yet, right? So the 49ers, and again, there are a lot of things besides DVOA. It's just, I think, a good metric to use as one thing to compare two teams in one matchup. The 49ers are 16th in DVOA. But remember, the Rams last week outgained them 7.1 yards per play to 4.9. So there were turnovers in there. There are other things, to your point, with the defense didn't play as well. And the Bucs are 18th in DVOA, despite that 4-1 record. So nobody, again, can take away the wins that you've banked. But some of the ways that they've won these games, obviously, they had the 4th-and-10. Baker escaped against the Texans. You could argue that Nick Chubb should have just gone down right before. So they've had a bunch of these wins. I don't think that's luck. I do think there is something, right? You're winning those games. And the team clearly believes in that, both on offense, defense, and coaching. Then when it comes down to the end, they're going to be, you know, on top on the scoreboard. That is something that seems to be repeatable and something they've done a lot. But over the course of the entire season, those things do tend to even out. I think the injuries for the 49ers certainly are a big thing. I would agree with Frank. I think that Mac Jones has played well and certainly admirably. We also just see if he even would make it to the next game. I mean, he was almost throwing up on the sideline, clearly injured his knee in some capacity, and was a lot of short dump offs and short passes, both to Kendrick Bourne and to Christian McCaffrey. It seems like the Rams finally, I think Kirk Herbstreit kept mentioning it, the Rams finally stopped some of those short passes. This offense isn't going to be the same with him as it is with a healthy Brock Purdy. I think they already made that mistake of bringing Purdy back too soon. They'll make sure, now that they have banked a couple wins, maybe they didn't think that they would have, that they play, you know, plenty of games and make sure that Purdy is healthy. And to that point, before the season, the 49ers were projected to be favored in 15 of their 17 games. So that doesn't mean you're going to win those games, but it does mean before the season, it looked like their schedule, I think they had the easiest schedule by opposing season win totals. They are a team that not only have they won some games maybe you thought they would lose, now they have those wins banked, which gives them a little more room to rest Purdy. I think this is a game, I agree, I think I would probably lean towards the Bucs. Again, also a far travel for the 49ers, another California team, or a California team here going east all the way to Florida. And to Baker Mayfield, he is eighth in QBR. I thought it was interesting. He is number one in PFF's, what they call big time throws. Don't ask me to define that metric, but it is a good sounding metric. He is number one in it. But he is 52nd in turnover worthy plays. I didn't even know there were 52 quarterbacks who had played this season. But
kind of like Tyler Warren's pass at the goal line or something. Wow.
Yeah.
Does that include Cam Akers' touchdown pass last week in London?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So I think there are some underlying things there. Baker takes chances. He's gotten away with those right now, and they are winning. But I think that some of the underlying advanced metrics are saying, hold on, this isn't a team that's ranked in the top 10. They're 18th, even though they're 4-1.
Fair. That's fair.
So if you had to pick one church to go to, Ben, would you go to the church of DVOA or the church of EPA?
I guess I would say DVOA. I think because of that adjustment as well. Right. And so I totally get it.
I just love sometimes, like, I'm the biggest fan of The Athletic. Like, it's my first thing I go to after Yahoo every day, of course. After. And there's so much EPA, 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 EPA. I'm like, guys, just tell me how many yards you threw for. I enjoy my EPA, don't get me wrong. You know, but like, when EPA and DVOA meet in the bar, who wins? Like, if EPA and DVOA like had to arm wrestle and over the top, like, which one, when it turns its hat around, becomes a different animal?
The winner faces the PFF grades. Is that what we're doing here? No.
Yeah. I like my PFF grades QBR. As well, right? QBR. Would you like better, passer rating or QBR? Like, which is better between the two?
QBR's trash.
Anybody?
I'll just say it. QBR's trash.
Yeah, like,
it is. It's right? It's a bad QBR. There's too much noise in QBR. I hate it.
Yeah. I'm just saying. That's all. Anyway, I digress. These numbers actually have value, certainly. That's why Ben is here, to crunch those numbers, to put them all into a giant number-crunching machine, and then come out and say, like, this is what the numbers tell me. Ben, I'm not mocking you. I promise you. I really do mean that.
All good.
Sometimes, not you. Not no. Like, my favorite podcast sometimes just become all jargon, and I'm like, fine. Anyway, not you. I promise. Do I have to say that again? I'm just, now I feel bad because, again, it's
no. All right, you're good.
Let's
get
to the Packers and the Bengals here. And I feel bad that some people might go, like, this isn't a good game, and you're wrong. Packers and Bengals.
Oh, no, they're not. They're not. This is a terrible game.
It's a fantastic game. Okay, it might be a terrible game, but it is awesome television. Awesome. Like we said yesterday, Joe Flacco needed help crossing the street. He doesn't really, but in Cincinnati, you have to cross the street to get to the practice field. Jamar Chase said today that he says the plays too fast, but he's getting used to them. And they said, hey, do you have a favorite, like, Joe Flacco moment as a kid? He goes, not really. I watched Drew Brees. I'm from Louisiana. But
Drew Brees out of retirement. Breaking news.
Of Joe Flacco leading the Bengals, and some people like went at me on my Instagram TikTok video yesterday. They say I was saying Bengals. I wasn't saying Bengals, right? Although I am a big fan of from the 80s, like the band, not the Boomer Esiason Bengals. The Bengals are awful if you look at what they've done without Joe Burrow.
Horrible.
So they lost 48-10 to Minnesota. They lost 28-3 in Denver. And they were down 28-3 after three quarters last week to Detroit. That is as bad a three-week stretch as any team in the NFL. But I am telling you right now, and I mean this, it is not just because I'm a Browns fan that assumes the worst is going to happen. I'm not one of those people. I'm not. And I really don't like those people. I don't want to see your jersey with 41 quarterbacks on it. All right? It's a loser mentality. Cut the crap. I am not one of those people. That said, I think Joe Flacco is going to throw the cheese out of the football in Lambeau. And I think this game is going to be closer than you think, Frank, and it's going to be fun.
It'll be interesting. I'm not spending too much time on this game. I ain't going to lie to you because this dog is barking already. But I will say this. Look, Ben, you know this too. If you're in the realm of betting, if you like to dabble on games here and there, you understand that when it comes to the NFL, you could be profitable by just going through the schedule every week and saying, what is the team that nobody will be taking this week? What team looks like it has absolutely no chance to compete? Last week, it was 49ers. I talked about that on the show. 49ers did pretty well for themselves. This week, who on earth is taking the Bengals? Who on earth is looking at this card and saying, yes, give me the Cincinnati Bengals? And that's exactly the time I take the ugliest pooch on the entire card and just say, I don't know how it's going to happen necessarily. Maybe it is Joe Flacco throwing the you-know-what out of the ball, perhaps. But somehow, some way, the Cincinnati Bengals keep this at least reasonably competitive. I don't know how. I can't tell you. But every week I watch the NFL, as I have for my entire life, and it happens every week that some team where I say, how on earth can the Tennessee Titans beat the Arizona Cardinals? This is the easiest survivor pick in the world. Well, you see what happens. I think the Bengals keep it close. I do. I don't know if it's a backdoor cover. I don't know. But I think the spread is 14, and I take most 14-point underdogs in the NFL, including this really, really wretched Bengals team.
Yeah, this is I think to Frank's point, is a really interesting game from a betting perspective. I'm not sure a lot of people think the Bengals have a chance to win the game as two touchdown underdogs, but this actually opened as a Packers minus 13.5 kind of last week, went up to 14.5 just based off of how bad they looked. And Andrew, we must be reading the same things. I had that, was looking up that same note. I can't remember a team that the Bengals, the last 3 weeks, they have been down at least 28-3 in every single game. I mean,
they have the worst point differential in the NFL. They're negative 71 through 5 weeks. Awful.
Just not even absolutely competitive. But that being said, almost covered against the Lions, almost backdoored there. But for the most part, they haven't been too competitive. I know Frank won't like this, given his thoughts that I didn't know on QBR, but I thought it was interesting. Jake Browning, 29th. Yeah, you know, 29th in QBR at 35.3. Joe Flacco's 31st. So as bad as Jake Browning has been, he was ranked higher by QBR than Joe Flacco has been this season.
And the Bengals have allowed more sacks than the Browns.
Yeah. We saw that a little bit in the spread. This didn't move very much, right? Maybe moved half a point from Packers 14.5 to back to 14 when Flacco was announced the starter. I think it's just, I can't remember a bigger indictment on a quarterback that a veteran in, 4 days is going to learn the playbook more than the backup who's been there for years and has been the guy behind Joe Burrow. I think that just shows how little faith they certainly have. And the way that the Browns coach, Kevin Stefanski, had kind of described this trade as it kind of came out of nowhere as well. Then that surprised them. I think the Bengals just said, all right, enough of Jake Browning. We need someone, anyone else in here. But I thought it was interesting that that didn't move. The Packers 7th overall in DVOA, the 3rd best defense. Bengals, as you would expect, dead last, 31st in offense, 30th in defense. They're also tied for the worst record in the league at 1-4 against the spread. And the Packers, I feel like it's been a while since we remembered that they played a similar game, obviously not a 14-point spread, against the Cowboys, obviously in Dallas, where they were dominating the game, somehow were, after that blocked PAT, returned only up 13-2, and then were losing at halftime, end up tying the game, obviously don't cover the spread around, I believe, a touchdown favorite. So it can certainly happen, but all of the trends are favoring the Packers. Matt LaFleur as a 7-point favorite off an in-season bye, 3-0 straight up and against the spread, all those games at home. And Zach Taylor, the first 3 months of the season, he is 27-27-1 straight up with Joe Burrow. He is 0-16 with any other quarterback, losing by almost 14 points a game. So that's a great stat from the Action Network. This looks as all the makings of a blowout, especially a Packers team also coming off a bye, stewing for 2 weeks off of tying the Cowboys. I don't know. To Frank's point, you don't make a lot of money laying 14 points in the NFL. Right. But this is a scary one to back the Bengals, even at plus 14.
Real quick, though, I want to add this. 45.8% of Yahoo survival pool entries who are left 48. Are on the Packers. When has that ever gone wrong? When is the free space on the bingo card ever lost in Survivor, right? Like, I don't know. I'm just telling you, this is the exact kind of game where you're like, I don't know. I don't know how the Bengals just covered, but they did somehow. We see it.
And just more to add to Frank, when this was 14.5, this was the biggest spread or the biggest favorite the Packers had been since 2012. When Aaron Rodgers, really? They played the Jaguars, and they didn't cover that game. They did win the game, but it's a long time since the Packers have been this big of a favorite as well. You know, it's a be careful spot. I hear Frank as well. It's just, this would be a stay away for me.
And this is the point where Andrew says, for recreational purposes only. Coming up next, the Lions and Chiefs. And the Hail Mary reunion on Monday night in Washington. You're watching Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage. I'm Andrew. That's Frank. That's Ben. Now let's do Sunday night. I missed Sunday night last week. I was flying back from London. When I say I missed it, I didn't see a snap of the game. I was passed out, as they say, flying back over the Atlantic with a mask on and a hood over my head. And I missed Mike Tirico calling the guy with the ball in the stands running up the steps in his Matt Milano jersey. It was one of the TV moments of the decade. I will be tuned in, however, this Sunday night when the Lions at 4-1 visit the short week Kansas City Chiefs at 2-3 with Tirico and Collinsworth and Melissa down to the sideline. Taylor Decker's a question mark on the O-line. Terrion Arnold, we know, is out. Rashee Rice not playing this week, but guys, he could be back next week. Detroit leads the NFL in scoring at nearly 35 points a game. The last two times these two quarterbacks have been, actually the only two times, they were both classics. Back in 2018, Jared Goff and the Rams beat Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs 54-51 at the Coliseum on a Monday night in Los Angeles. I was at that game. It is as good a regular season game as I have ever seen in person. It was supposed to be at Estadio Azteca in Mexico City, but about a month earlier, Shakira went down there and tore up the field. So the game got moved to the Coliseum, and it was utterly fantastic. The other time they met was the 2023 opener when the Lions went to Arrowhead. Chris Jones sat in a suite holding out with his agents, and the Lions stunned the world by beating the Chiefs in an opener. The Chiefs are 0-3 against teams with winning records. They've lost to the Eagles. They've lost to the Jaguars. They've lost to the Chargers. They blew a 14-point lead to the Jaguars this past Monday night on the road. And while they certainly look better with Xavier Worthy, and yes, Tyquan Thornton is finally playing like that really fast guy that ran that one afternoon in Indianapolis, and he's now also on my fantasy team, the Lions are better. They are just better. Period. I don't know that they're going to drop 35 on them, but I don't know why, Frank, I feel, and I have no idea what the number is. True story. I haven't looked at any of the numbers this week. I almost never do until Ben tells me what they are. I feel you'll that good about then. The Lions in this game. Yeah. What is it?
You're for quite a shock here because the Chiefs are -2.5 the last I saw. And I actually agree with it because, look, I have Lions number one in my power rankings. I do think they're the best team in the NFL over the course of 5 weeks. I believe in them. But a lot of injuries in that secondary. And one thing that kind of got overshadowed on Monday night with Trevor Lawrence, the big comeback, the Jaguars win, Patrick Mahomes looked awesome. Like legitimately, like, this is as good as I've ever seen Patrick Mahomes play. And I realize the gravity of that statement, right? I realize what I'm saying when I say that. Patrick Mahomes looked as good as I've ever seen him play. He was awesome in that game. And I think that he did the Superman thing for a few weeks. He gets Xavier Worthy back. They're starting to get in a little bit of a rhythm offensively with the dudes they have there. I think that this is a bad spot for Detroit's defense to be missing both of their cornerbacks. We say Amon-Ra St. Brown mispracticed on Wednesday. I know he's going to play, but we don't know if he's fully healthy. They have not gotten Jameson Williams going all year. Still scoring a lot of points. Great offense. The coordinator thing was overblown. We see that now. I just think there's a bad spot for the Lions to be in. You're going to get a desperate Chiefs team that does not, they don't want to be 2-4. They didn't want to be 2-3. I get that. But it just seems like the urgency is there at the Chiefs. They're at home. Mahomes is playing great. I just think there's a bad spot for the Lions. And that's why I think the Chiefs win this game. And it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to watching it, but I do think the Chiefs win here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching this game as well. Chiefs 2.5 point favorite, total up to 53, open 49.5. So both those offenses playing well. And then I think to Frank's point, those defensive injuries also open Chiefs -1.5. I think that line movement, some sharp money, but talking to odds makers, also just those injuries on defense for the Lions, right? So, well, what did we see just 1 week ago? The Ravens, that line could not move enough against the Texans. And obviously Lamar Jackson was out, but that was also because of all of those defensive injuries for the Ravens. At a certain point, you just run out of bodies and you don't have NFL caliber corners necessarily across the board. Good teams are going to find that weakness if there's one corner to target. If all of a sudden all three corners you can target and a safety or two, that's a problem. And especially against a team as good as the Chiefs. I thought it was interesting. We always kind of have seen so far this season thinking of the Chiefs offense struggling. To Frank's point, I thought they were great on Monday night. They put up 476 yards of offense to the Jaguars, 319. So completely dominated in that sense. And they also have 6.0 yards per play. Detroit has 6.0 yards per play. The Chiefs are at 5.7 on offense. So They're not that far behind. They're the seventh ranked offense overall by DVOA. The Lions, number one by DVOA. Chiefs are sixth overall. So these are two really good teams. I think that line movement has a lot to do with the Lions' defensive injuries. And it's happened a little bit, right? This happened last year, mentioned on the preseason podcast when we were out in Vegas. The Lions, through week 12 last year, they were first in Andrew's favorite stat, EPA. Towards the rest of the season, after those injuries from week 12 on, they were 29th. They were the sixth most injured defense of the last 25 seasons last season. And some of that's happening again this season where, again, they've overcome it. They've certainly played well. The Lions, to Frank's point as well, number one power rated team. One odds maker I spoke to, he had Lions, Bills, Packers, Chiefs, number four, Eagles.
Wow.
And he said if the Lions were at full strength, that was an interesting Chiefs power rank. He said if the Lions were at full strength, this would be closer to a pick 'em, maybe Chiefs a half a point favorite. So a lot of injuries on that defense. Some of it too, just the Lions are just an absolute covering machine as well. They are in the Dan Campbell era, 51-21-1. That is 71% against the spread, by
Seriously?
Far the number one team.
They're 30 games
they get
over
the benefit
500?
Of the doubt.
Oh my goodness, wow. That's
They just go 12-5 every season or better. They have crushed it against the spread. I do agree this is a difficult spot. Frank, I would put the Lions on a teaser. That's what I would say with some other team. Get that up
like
to 8.5. But
seven,
it is tough to trust that defense. And yes, this is a big game for the Chiefs, who also have a lot of tough opponents coming up too. So they can't afford to lose too much ground in the AFC.
I'm with you on the injuries. I can also tell you that a couple of weeks ago when I was in Detroit to see this team live, the Lions talked all week about not benching Terry and Arnold, but lowering his snap count because they wanted to put Amik Robertson outside, and Terrence Arnold had some issues. Look, they're a better team with him on the field. He's a first-round talent. We know that. They need him. And last year, to your point, Ben, all the pieces were in pieces with the defense by the end of the year. It's a miracle that they hung on as long as they did. Aiden Hutchinson looks back, maybe doesn't have all the juice he used to have, but he is a special, special player. This is a great game regardless. This is a Sunday night game where, look, last week, the Patriots upset the Bills, but on paper, clearly one team was better than the other. This one's like a legitimately delicious game. Let's put it that way. As Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions go to Kansas City to face the ground game and the legs of Patrick Mahomes as he is their leading rusher.
Crazy.
Yep, he still is their leading rusher heading into week six with 190 yards on the ground, as odd as that is to say. All right, so Monday night, there are two games. And I hate it. I hate it especially because these are two games that I want to watch. They should not make them simultaneous. One of them's at 7:15, the Bills on the road in Atlanta. So Josh Allen, an hour into the game at 7:15, is going to get a good portion of America turning out or turning off and tuning out to, at 8:15, watch Caleb Williams of the Bears in the Hail Mary rematch on the road in Washington against Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, who will be wearing the same black uniforms they wore last year when Noah Brown caught the Hail Mary from Jaden Daniels. Is that rubbing it in? I don't care. I think it's fun. I think it's spicy. I think number one against number two and two Heisman winners, I think all of that is fantastic. But I don't want to have to flip back and forth between these two games. Yes, I know. For 18 years, I had a job in which I controlled the remote, and I think reasonably well watched at times 11 games at once. But now in the comfort of my own home, without that show being provided for me on a Monday night, I just want to pour a drink and watch one game at a time. Why can't I do that? It's not a college football Saturday. Anyway, that said, let's talk Bears and Commanders. All right. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salters, and Laura Rutledge. Terry McLaurin doesn't look like he's going to play. The Bears, it's not just the Hail Mary last year, as we know, guys. That Hail Mary broke the Bears and broke Matt Eberflus. It broke them. They lost 10 in a row. I think they dropped 11 or 10 of their last 11. It broke them. But Caleb is playing so much better. He has 5 more touchdowns through the air, 2 fewer interceptions, and 9 fewer sacks taken through 4 games this year than he did last year. He is that much better, which is nice, and I think he's going to make plays. But I think the Commanders win this game because the Bears can't stop the run, and the Commanders really run it well, even without Austin Ekeler and with that guy named Bill, who is still giddy that he spoke to Tom Brady last week. The Commanders have the number one rush offense in the NFL, nearly 157 yards a game. And the Bears give up even more than that, 164 yards a game, the second worst in the NFL. So unless Dennis Allen can magically, over the bye, and the Bears are coming off a bye, fix their run defense at home, I'm going to go Washington. Now, considering I don't know the numbers, now both of you tell me I'm wrong.
I'm going to give something that, you know, Ben knows a lot about, you know, and I know a lot of, everybody knows a lot about this because it's very basic, but we don't spend enough time talking about it. And that's rest disadvantage. It is a big thing in the NFL. You can see this through the numbers against the spread straight up, no matter what. The Chicago Bears are coming off a bye. They're playing a Commanders team, obviously had to play last Sunday at LA across the country. There are 8 games on the schedule this week. There's only 15 games. 8 games on the schedule where one team has a rest advantage over the other. Very poor job by the NFL scheduling that. It shouldn't be that way. The worst of it being Brown Steelers, obviously. You know about this, Andrew. As Ben pointed out, I didn't know this. There's never been a team to come straight from London to play a game and has to play a team coming off a bye like the Steelers are.
That's ridiculous. I have to correct. There was one. There was one. So now they're the second. There was that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Either way.
But the Browns are driving. They're driving. They don't have to get on a plane.
I don't care. It's ridiculous scheduling by the NFL. And sometimes it's unavoidable, but it is an edge. No question. I think you give Ben Johnson 14 days of rest for his players and him to self-scout to say, you know, maybe we do need to get Luther Burden involved here and there. Colston Loveland can do this and that. This is what Caleb Williams is doing wrong. We're going to correct that next week. Oh, and here's some trick plays I'm going to cook up in these 14 weeks or these 14 days. I think Ben Johnson has been in the lab for 2 weeks. Let's put it that way. I think that this Bears team has also been stewing about that loss, right? And this gives them a little bit of extra time to remember, hey, we lost in this Hail Mary. That ain't happening again. We're going to go in. We're going to atone for that. I'm just going to say it right now. I think the Bears win this straight up. I think the Bears win this game on the road against a good Commanders team. I don't have anything against the Commanders, but I think the Bears' extra rest right here is really going to help them. I think Ben Johnson has got so many clubs in his bag for this game. You're going to see 7.5 irons coming out, stuff you didn't even know about. You're going to be like, wow, Ben Johnson in his bag. Bears win this game straight up.
Yeah, Frank crushed it, and he must be have my Google spreadsheet too. Just reading from that with rest advantage and everything else. As we get further into the NFL season, there are more and more things kind of to add to the handicap. Obviously, bye weeks. Now you have certain rest disadvantages, right? Teams coming off a Monday night, playing on next Sunday. But now you have bye weeks, and that's an even bigger rest advantage. And then you have the travel ones, right, with international games. So there's lots to keep track of. We haven't a ton. Weather is the next thing. We'll have to handicap at some point. Hasn't been a ton of weather so far this football season. But this is just one, to Frank's point, a little bit of a referendum, much like we said, the Cardinals, right, and Jonathan Gannon, and how good you are as a coach. Can you hold that team together? I think there's the same thing with Ben Johnson. I mean, they already played that game against the Lions, where the Lions kind of wanted to make a point where, hey, we're a lot more than Ben Johnson here, and they got destroyed in Detroit. I think this is, to Frank's point, a little of a Ben Johnson revenge. This game totally derailed the Bears last season. Really difficult flying all the way back across the country for the Commanders. And I think Terry McLaurin is also a big, yes, you know, a big loss. That was a close game against the Chargers that kind of turned around with that punt out of the end zone where they roughed the punter. And all of a sudden, instead of the Chargers having great field position, I think up 10-3, or even with a punt return up 17-3, all of a sudden the Commanders came back and that game kind of flipped on its head. So I think that game was a weird one, was closer than maybe the final score. And the Bears, if you're going to do it, now's the time. Caleb is 12th in Frank's favorite stat, QBR. Jaden Daniels, I believe, in the 20s. So Caleb has been playing better. The Bears, you're coming off a bye week. You should be healthier, maybe a little healthier in the secondary. This is a time to show it, certainly on that Monday Night Football showcase, and also make up for week one against the Vikings, where it looked for a quarter and a half like, wow, this is the new team. Now you have that national spotlight again. Show me something different than you did before.
Here's my prediction. And I'm going to stick with the Commanders here, although you guys are convincing me the storylines here for the Bears, certainly. My prediction is this. Ben Johnson will cook up trick plays. Plays plural. One of them will go to Tyreek Stevenson. Stevenson will make an appearance on offense. And he will be part of a trick play.
Oh, I love it.
I have no inside information.
That'd be awesome.
Okay, I am just spitballing here. Mark it down. Mark the tape. Madison, mark the tape. Do we still have tape?
I'm blowing up your
phone. Get out the grease pencil. Mark the tape.
Andrew, come on. I love that. I love call that. Me that's Monday. Such a troll job. Yeah, that's great.
Not call me maybe. Call me Monday. Maybe. And that's the show. Okay, that was it. Can we put that back on the screen? Like, I actually want to say goodbye in person. Like, I feel bad. Frank, thank you.
Absolutely.
Ben, thank you. Have a fantastic football weekend. I mean, enjoy your Dante Moore and Francisco Mendoza battle as well. I know as a devotee of the draft, I will be enjoying that one on Saturday evening at 35,000 feet or Saturday afternoon, regardless. For Ben and for Frank, my name is Andrew. Thank you for listening and watching the Inside Coverage Podcast, the How and the Why of any and everything you need to know. We will see you on Monday. So long, everybody.